This is the State of Things. I'm Frank Stachow. Food is a religion in the South, and some foods are sacramental. Think biscuits, buttermilk, and bacon, to name three. The Savor the South cookbook series invites food writers and chefs to meditate on traditional food items in the American South. The entire collection is going to include 24 volumes. Kelly Alexander is here. Her book, Peaches, came out earlier this year. Bill Smith is here as well, the chef at Crook's Corner in Chapel Hill. He's got a book coming out soon, Crabs and Oysters. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Bill, first, may I say, thanks for bringing the banana pudding.
Not at all.
The staff loved it. I hope there's some when I get...
I tried to bring a lot.
I hope so, because...
There's no crab in it.
They're telling me how great it is. I haven't had a chance yet, but thank you. Kelly, talk about the peaches. You wrote a wonderful story in the introduction to this about eating peach ice cream.
Yes.
Thank you.
It was wonderful.
I believe that a lot of times in life, you don't know what you got till it's gone, as a lot of people believe, as has been written about many times. But peaches are that thing for me. I grew up in Georgia. I love peaches, but I never really thought about them as something to love until I left Georgia, because they were always there. If you'd asked me what my favorite fruit was when I was growing up, I would have said cherries. I never would have thought about the peach because I always had them. Then suddenly I was a big grown-up girl living in New York, and fresh peaches weren't everywhere. I mean, my grandmother had a tree in her old age apartment complex. There was a peach tree in her backyard. And then suddenly I was far away from them and I missed them so much.
Interestingly enough, peaches weren't always there. They're not from there. They're from probably China a long, 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 long time ago.
Exactly.
And not necessarily the perfect place for peaches.
No.
Georgia, right?
No, they are not. Peaches are definitely not a new world fruit like tomatoes, which people sometimes forget about. Peaches grow a ton in China. That's number one in the world. And then even in the U.S., most people don't know that they're really the biggest peach market is California.
Yeah.
And the reason why we don't know that is because why? In the South, our food is super sacred, and we have a war between South Carolina and Georgia because peaches happened to grow there in the colonial era. They haven't really thrived in the South since then, although we still grow them, and I think we grow them better than anybody else because I'm from Georgia. So there you go.
Well, and you, as you point out, the girls from Georgia still identify with peaches.
Of course. I mean, you're a Georgia peach. You hear it all of the time. Georgia's still the peach state. And, you know, when people ask me about South Carolina peaches, I have to be very polite. I recognize that they are delicious peaches, but I'm from Georgia. I not only like Georgia peaches better, I am one.
Well, you wrote the Georgia peach girls, you know, still identify with that. And so Sean Wynn, our producer, is from Atlanta. And we said, do you identify? And she said, well, no, but... Then she named like four friends of hers who are all young women who, yeah, they have like peach somewhere in their name and their, you know, email account or their hashtag. So apparently it's true.
We are inured to it. Yes.
Bill, tell us, I'm sure nostalgia and food is what it's all about for you as well, right? I mean, nostalgia is a very big part of how we experience food.
It is. And in this volume I'm working on it, that is certainly true. They asked me what I wanted to write about, which one, you know, I helped them screen some of the earlier volumes. And they said, why don't you write one? And so they said, what do you want to write? And I said, well, you know, why not crabs? And the reason I did that is because I grew up on the coast of North Carolina, and we caught crabs and cleaned them and all that kind of stuff. And they said, well, okay, do crabs and oysters, but whatever. We did that too. But it's from growing up. That's what I grew up
with. Yeah, and you remember them. And this wonderful – and your memory, because you did a piece on NPR, I think, on All Things Considered, where you talked about the greatest memory is the white bread that's left behind.
Yes. That recipe will be in this book.
Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah. Kelly, some cool recipes in this book. Peach ice cream, of course.
Yes, of course.
Which is great. And how many of these recipes were – because peaches, you think, are they sweet? They're going to all have to be dessert recipes, kind of, right?
It was very nice to write a cookbook where the first chapter could be desserts, and that made sense, of course. You know, I wanted to not be irresponsible with this book. The woman who came up with this series, the Savor the South series that the UNC Press is doing, she's a fabulous editor Bill and I work with named Elaine Meisner. You know, I said to her when we were putting this book together, I just don't want to do any stupid recipes. And what I meant by that was use peach where it isn't natural. You know what I mean? Like peach meatloaf kind of thing. That didn't seem right somehow to me. And I never want to tell somebody if you have a perfect ripe peach, please just eat it. Don't cook it. Just have it. But what the book is for is when you have a glut. There's a great food writer and other writer, too, named Julia Reed, who wrote for Newsweek for years, and she described the tyranny of summer produce. I love that phrase. So when all you see when you go to the grocery store are peaches, this book is going to give you some idea of what to do with them while you have them.
So I might make an arugula meatloaf. Yeah. Would you? But here's the one I love. This was my all time favorite. I'll ask you yours in a moment. Peach French toast sandwiches.
Well, that's just super decadent. It's just an extension of another way of really having dessert for breakfast. Which who doesn't like that? But French toast is very big in my house. I have young kids, and my husband is the French toast master. So anyway, I'm having French toast a lot.
Yeah, but give us the recipe. Tell us how you make it.
So if you want to make a French toast sandwich, and I'm smiling right now at Frank because I know that he loves the idea of frying a sandwich.
Dude, it's great.
So you fry the French toast first. Yeah. You fill it with the peaches, and then you fry it again. And then you don't eat anything for the rest of the day.
Yeah, this is a great idea. It's fantastic. Bill, tell us how you came up with the recipes. I mean, obviously, this first thought of eating crabs in eastern North Carolina is how you get started. How'd you find the recipes and come
up with
them?
Well, it's turned into something of a research project. I had all these old Junior League cookbooks, church cookbooks and stuff, so I thought, well, I'll start there. And that's sort of taken over. So I'm going back and it's sort of I'm archiving old recipes as much as anything. I've got new stuff too and things, some other things. But that's what it's turned into. And I've had a great time because I've actually learned a bunch of stuff that I'm surprised at what I've picked up.
Well, the Junior League cookbooks, you learn that you can do an awful lot with cream of mushroom soup.
A Worcestershire sauce in this case, yeah. for crabs, believe me. I'm telling everybody I've learned to spell it finally because I've had to write it down so much.
Well, are there common things? I mean, I guess the first thing you have to do if you want to modernize those Junior League cookbooks is figure out how to make your own cream of mushroom soup.
Yeah, actually, so far, no cream of mushroom soup is
not in this one. Not for the crabs, but I mean for others.
Well, one might. Yeah, I suppose I could. I've never tried before.
But
I'm trying to think of something else that I do use. Well, Worcestershire is the main prepared product that turns up the
roast. Don't even tell me there's not a bunch of mayo.
Oh, mayonnaise, of course.
Yes.
Yeah, good point.
You could make your own.
I could make my own, but
what characterizes Eastern North Carolina cuisine?
Well, it's funny. It's something I grew up with. So I didn't really think about it for a long time, but as I've gotten older and I've found that I focus on it, it's food that people cooked for themselves. It's a working class farming sort of place where people worked hard and they needed hearty food. They didn't have servants of any sort. Nobody had. And so it was the sort of food you cooked for yourself.
Mm. You've talked about your grandmother's cooking, mm-hmm. too, and how important that is to you.
Yeah, we were talking about that a minute ago, actually. Yes, my great-grandmother, specifically, we called her grandmother, but she ran a big house in downtown New Bern, and the whole family went there every day for lunch from work or school. And it was a big deal. And she had it ready at noon, and we were back where we belonged at, 1:05. So, yeah, but she was a great cook, and I grew up with that expectation that food ought to be good.
But that tells you something about what that food must have been. It had to be everyday food. It had to be preparable in a short period of time. She's fussing over it perhaps in the sense that she cares.
Yeah, I was talking to my mother about this last night, actually, and we don't remember her being in the kitchen all morning. We were thinking about how did she do that? It wasn't like she got up in the morning and went straight to the stove. We both puzzled over it, talking about it yesterday.
Somehow she did it.
Yeah.
Kelly, what's the theory behind or the tie that binds, I mean, apart from the fact that they're all Southern, the thought behind this particular series?
It's exactly what you're getting at. In the South, we are so celebrated for our food traditions, and part of what's behind that is that we're exalting very humble ingredients. So that's what this series is meant to celebrate, is we're taking these iconic Southern ingredients that are kind of plain and simple. There's buttermilk, there's a peach, there's a crab, and we're showing you that they're amazing. It's celebrating what is right in front of us. That is what Southern food is. People think it's big platters of fried food. Okay, sometimes it's that, but most of the time, it's really, what Bill and I might say in the trade is poor people food. Mm-hmm. It's food that's very humble, mm-hmm. that's easy to find and get your hands on, and the Southern way is to make the most of it.
And the Southern way was to sit down and eat it as a family. And so those giant collectives, I think, probably adds the emotional component that is very important in food.
It's it.
Yeah.
I mean, I always say when we're eating a peach, we're not eating a peach. You're eating the memory of the most idealized peach that you've ever had every time. It's a feeling.
And it all comes back. And it's not just the feeling of how good it tasted, but all of the people who were around the table and that great-grandmother who brought it out.
That's the best part, really.
Because it's always so – because you think, oh, great, I'm finally going to learn how to make barbecue. And it's like pulled pork barbecue sauce. Oh, yeah, that's how you make barbecue. So why was that barbecue I had so great? And, of course, it's all the rest of that stuff. Mm.
It's the company you had with it.
I think everybody's had that experience. If you want to make your mother's specialty, your grandmother's specialty, your aunt's specialty, then you make it and it's not as good, or it's not quite right. It's not the same.
Right.
It's never as great as it is in your memory.
That is correct. Yeah.
So what's the weirdest peach recipe that you rejected from this book, Kelly? Didn't get
peach
in.
Peach rejects. Wow, that's a really good question. I would not put peaches in tomato sauce for spaghetti. Someone suggested that to me, and I did not like it. I didn't appreciate it.
Yeah.
I like a fresh peach with a tomato in a salad. That can be really good.
You know, you probably could make a vegan peach meatloaf. I'm going over it now.
I can't let go of it.
I can't let go of it. Here, see, what I think we would do here, somebody said to me, you know, the only thing Durham lacks is a really good vegan restaurant. I thought, you know, but what they would do is there'd be bacon-wrapped seitan. Because we just can't do it. Can't have the seitan without the bacon around it.
I'm not going to argue with you.
I think it's the best thing. And then, of course, we would deep fry it. Bill, you talked about this being a research project for you. Are you coming across recipes that that surprised you?
Yes, actually, crazy things. The one that came to mind right that minute when you were asking that question was I found this very strange recipe. And it was in a lady's guide from the 1920s, and it was for oyster juice, but it was like you boil the shells and then you strained it, and it said it has no nutritional value, but it's refreshing or something, and then you served it with long points of toast.
here's the thing that I have learned, because I'm getting lots of clams these days because I do the community supported fish from the coast. We pick up once a week, you get whatever, and so you learn about things like trigger fish, which I didn't know about, and get lots of clams. Cook them in the pressure cooker with like half a cup of water, and the broth you get from pressure cooked clams, and then also shrimp shells. Mm-hmm. So you boil shrimp shucks. Who knew?
Yeah.
I'm learning all kinds of stuff
for broth a lot. Yeah.
For broth, variations of deviled crab.
Many.
You come across? Yeah,
and funny, they're not they're very timid in their spicing. A lot of them. You think deviled crab would be spicy, but most have like an eighth of a teaspoon of mustard or something, and then they say, "Look out, it's going to be." So I'm going to have to fix that part.
Sauce.
Yeah, I'll be fixing that. So.
but I mean, crab is so subtle. Maybe that's the point.
Yeah, I don't know. I was surprised at how many varieties of recipes for that I found and how alike they all were. At the same time, it's been a curious thing here.
You can now we talked about peaches being primarily for dessert, although also for breakfast. But then as an entree, you've got peach glazed ham.
That's a big old Southern thing. I mean, one of the easiest recipes that came to mind was just taking a big ham and glazing it with peaches. I really wish that I could have said, you know, serves 3 to 300. It just depends, because you can serve so many. It's an endless thing. That is the cornerstone of so many Southern buffets. My favorite savory recipe, though, I thought about for a long time was I make roasted chicken all the time. My whole family loves it. It's easy. I'll put an apple and an onion in the cavity and it's done. And I thought, well, what if I did a peach? And it was a great idea. Mm. My house smelled really good. It was really sweet. So that made sense to me, especially with a rock hard peach. That is a perfect thing to do with it.
Although I thought the what made that work, or a lemon is another thing you can stick in the middle, was the acid that kind of brought out some of the flavor.
You can do.
Peach is not highly acidic, I don't think.
No, it's not, but a true peach has really nice subtle flavor and really nice gentle sweetness. So it's a different way of getting around how to flavor your relatively plain chicken.
And then you got your freestone peaches and your not-so-freestone. Tell us about those. Here, no, before you talk about that, because I guess, you know, it's either it comes away easily or the flesh kind of sticks to the stone. What's the deal with industrially grown peaches in supermarkets? Because I, for a long time, before I went back to the farmer's market, stopped buying them. Because they would go from rock hard to dust, you know, and there was no sort of ever ripening.
The elusive peach, right?
Yeah.
It's really hard sometimes, some years, depending on a whole bunch of factors, to get a really nice, good one. So first of all, you're always eating a freestone peach, because what do they do with cling peaches? They make canned peaches. That's even why you know what a cling peach is, because it says on the can, cling peaches. Real peaches, Freestone peaches, are always what you're going to find fresh, almost always. 90% of the time, that's what we're eating. Why are there such bad peaches? Everyone asks me this. I mean, if I had a hand in making perfect peaches, I tell you I would do it for all of you. I didn't have a really great one this year, and I'm going to really disappoint my Georgians and even my South Carolinians when I say the best peach I had this year was from Whole Foods and it came from California. Mm. But that is the fact of the matter. It's a weather thing.
Well, but are they hybridized? Because we know that tomatoes are bad.
It is very much the same deal.
Because they grew them to transport them and not to eat them.
Very much the same deal. Yeah. And they're picked before they're ready, so they never fully ripen.
You have instructions for how to pick the perfect peach. Should there be one in your local market? Give us a clue.
So much of – I mean, people – I see people knocking around peaches and it kind of makes me want to cry, you know, like thumping them like you would thump a melon. Please don't do that. Really, the best thing to do is look at the peach for blemishes. If there aren't any, you're already on the road. And then smell it. What does a great peach smell like? It does not smell like an overripe peach that's about to turn. It does not smell like Old Lady perfume. A really ripe, ready-to-eat peach smells really subtly sweet.
Yeah, but they're never that way in the supermarket. They're always hard. They're never ready to smell. Are they?
You can get really lucky. You're going to have to, as they say, you'll have to smell a lot of peaches.
I want to thank you both for being on the program today. Kelly Alexander, a writer, Bill Smith, chef at Crook's Corner. The next Savor of the South event is a cookbook signing with Belinda Ellis, the author of Biscuits. It's at Southern Seas in Chapel Hill at 2 p.m. on Sunday, October 6th. Kelly's book is Peaches, and Bill is coming out with crabs and oysters.
Yes.
So look forward to all of that. Thanks for being on the show, and thank you for listening to The State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.